Hey, welcome to The Drop. This week we're bringing you an interview with Marco Benevento, who has a new album out called Let It Slide. You can get a link to that in the show notes and check out his upcoming tour dates as well, which we discuss in the interview. We talked just before the J-Rad show at the Anthem in D.C., which was really awesome. I'm really impressed by that band's ability to kind of create new material within things that are so familiar to us. And Marco and I talk a little bit about what it's like to play the music of the Grateful Dead, which I think is a pretty cool part of the conversation. So we talked about the making of his new album, his solo career, going back to the duo, his collaboration with Trey and Mike from Fish, and lots more. We hope you enjoy it. The Drop's brought to you by Cash or Trade, and Osiris works in partnership with Jambase. So we hope you enjoy what you hear, and please send us thoughts, feedback, and comments as we continue to evolve and grow this show. So we're going to get right into this interview with Marco. Enjoy. All right, I'm here with Marco. How's it going, Marco?
It's going good. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Nice. We're sitting here in D.C. before the J-Rad show at the Anthem. This place is pretty nice.
Yeah, it is really nice. Really big, but really nice.
It's nice to see you. And you just last week had an album release, Let It Slide.
Yeah.
Which is really great and totally different approach for this one, right?
Like, yeah, first time with a producer.
Yeah, how did that come together and how did it turn out? Like,
It came together because I was asked to sub for Leon Michaels, who we're talking about here, the producer, in the Arcs, which is Dan Arbeck's project.
Yep.
And so I subbed for him and I met him and got into his music and checked him out and was like, oh yeah, it's like really great. He has really great records, and so I asked him, and a friend of ours, Richard Swift, who's in the Arcs,
yeah,
kind of connected us, and Richard was like, oh yeah, you and Leon, man, you guys got to hook up. That would be a cool combo. So we linked up and made a record, and Leon had a lot of input, and you know we worked at his place in Queens, Diamond Mine, and. He really helped put the whole record together. I'd never worked with a producer before. I kind of I'm a bit of a control freak in the studio because I like know what's going on and I've made my own records before. Right. So, I knew what I wanted to do, but I also with my demos, I was just kind of done with them. I needed someone to help me put them all together, and he stepped in and really helped.
That's cool. So yeah, because all of your stuff before had been done through your own work. Like
yeah.
you had been hands on. So was it? I guess knowing the reputation of Leon Michaels, like maybe it wasn't as hard to let go and be like, okay, this is going to be different this time. Was it going in or it,
no? I was basically like, yeah, sure. Tell me what to do. And I was a total yes man. You know, I was very agreeable and anything, you know, he has great taste. So anything he suggested was just a great idea. And, also any sort of work I did in my own studio to add to it, he on the other side was also receptive to what I was doing as well. So it was like a cool combo.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And you, this album is like every song is different. I saw that it was like described as sort of piano rock, R&B, dance. I mean, it seems like there's a little bit of everything. Did you have a specific approach to these songs, or did it just like did they come together based on a bunch of stuff you were writing?
Yeah, I didn't have a specific approach. Yeah, it just kind of came up. You know, there's only I don't know 10 songs or something on the record, right?
Yep.
And you know, we had about 20. To pick from, and these were the ones that sort of stood out to Leon, but there was no there were specific song ideas. Like there's this one instrumental on the record called Humans that I kind of I've been listening to a lot of Ethiopian jazz and I like had an idea of what my version of that could be, so we kind of had that concept for that one song. So it was like every song had a different sort of reference and a different idea of what it could be.
Cool. So, I was going to ask you about that specific song. So I think it's awesome. It's like jazz, 70s. Like there's like a lot of cool sounds in that, but totally different from some other songs like Solid Gold and Baby Don't Make Me Wait are totally different from each other and from Humans. They're just everything's like which is awesome.
Yet it's like a kind of cohesive album. I feel like the way all the songs do have a bit of a thread you know, common yeah. thread.
Do you, like, people associate you with the jam scene, I think, because of, like, the duo and J-Rad and other stuff, uh-huh. but, like, this music, most of your solo work, like, I wouldn't describe as jam music at all. Yeah. Do you feel like you're fighting against that, or do you feel like it's complimentary, or?
It's complimentary. I'm not fighting against it. It's just, you know, it's, you know, since I've started touring, we've played all sorts of jam festivals and venues and everything, and with like guys from Fish mm-hmm. and with all sorts of other folks in that sort of scene. But you know, when we make our own records, or when I, you know, it's just its own thing, and yeah. I could see how, you know, people could think it could sound like it, but it really doesn't. It's like slightly misleading if you think it's going to be like a jam record,
yeah, because
there's not much soloing. A lot of the songs are like 3 minutes long,
yeah,
or less.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like definitely a record that focuses more on the sort of arrangements and just the song itself and the lyrics and the bass lines and the drum parts and stuff. Yeah. It's like a, almost like a psychedelic pop sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of textures on there. Like you can tell you, and I think you've talked about this before, that you go back on some songs and add
yeah.
layers, add synths, add, like mm-hmm. you have all that, those tools, so you can kind of like layer those in
yeah.
in a smart way. Mm-hmm. There's like, there's a lot of texture to it, I feel.
Yeah. I live in Woodstock, and I have a house and then a little side building, a studio that has a bunch of keyboards in it and a bunch of gear to mm-hmm. make records and stuff. And so any moment on a record that I felt was like, if there was a part in there's a part in Send It on a Rocket, like there's a bridge part where there was nothing. And I took it back to my house and added a lot of Mellotron and synths and, you know, all sorts of other sounds. And it really sort of glued that little part together.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I, you know, been messing around with synths and with circuit bent toys and with pianos for like the last 20 years.
Yeah.
So of course I have, or longer than that. So of course I have, you know, a bit of an arsenal of gear
yeah.
upstate in upstate New York. And yeah, it's hard to not put it on the record.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. And you you talked earlier this summer with another Osiris podcast, which is No Simple Road. I think you told those guys about kind of your musical family and how you've been around music your whole life.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And it seems like that was the way you grew up around music, and I think mm-hmm. your parents played or your dad played. Like,
yeah,
that
my
was
dad
sort of
loved
a,
to sing. My parents loved to listen to music. My mom loved Motown, like Smokey Robinson and mm-hmm. all sorts of great stuff. And my dad's from Italy, and he loved all that music as well, the Beatles. But he also was into like Neapolitan music, traditional Italian Neapolitan music. So I'd learn a lot of that stuff. My uncle played guitar, and like we would play like Hey Jude for like 20 minutes, like at like family gatherings and stuff. And my cousin, who's coming tonight, also plays, you know, bass. And so, yeah, music has always been in the family. Nobody really did gigs or anything, but they always played and loved, you know, music. And
yeah.
And my dad loves all the singers.
Yeah.
I love jazz. And, but yeah, so nobody was, like I said, like touring or gigging, but the musical appreciation and like
yeah.
the sort of effect that music had on family for gatherings and like parties was always like engraved in my mind of like, oh yeah, this is fun. You know,
I think about that now with my kids, you know, I want them to hear
yeah.
different kinds of music, but mostly like just music all the time.
Right.
And I hope that it rubs off in some way.
Yeah, it will. It totally will.
Obviously, you've known Joe Russo for a long time, since I think like, you know, you guys were kids, but I want to go back to the duo, because you guys came together, I think the duo officially came together in like 2001, but you guys had been playing together for a while before that. And it was sort of different from jam music at the time, but it's sort of like mm-hmm. fit right in and kind of took off within the jam scene. What was yeah. that? What was that like, that period?
Well, that was like 2002. 2002, we had a residency at the Knitting Factory.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, Joe was in a band called Fat Mama.
Mm-hmm.
And they were big in the sort of jam world. And that was basically the beginning of like jam bass and like Relics and all these things that are jam, very jam oriented websites and magazines that are. They were just I feel like that was like the beginning of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe had been in that scene for a while. So there was, you know, a lot of people sort of knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a lot of folks, you know, coming to see us that knew him from Fat Mama. And then there was, you know, we did the Knitting Factory for like a year. We literally played every Thursday for a year, like almost almost a year.
Were you guys living in New Jersey then, or were you in New York?
Joe was in Manhattan, I was in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And we would meet every Thursday and just, we wouldn't even like rehearse or do anything or talk about anything. We would just, I had some songs, I would just play them and Joe would just follow along, or we would just improvise and just like make stuff up. And,
and people loved it though.
And people loved it. And, you know, the Knitting Factory held like 150 people down there or something. So eventually, yeah, it was slow going. It was like experimental, slow going at first, but then it like, then our sound guy, Pete Costello, for J-Rad, currently, he was like a taper. He would like tape Soul Live and stuff and like these bands back in the day. And he showed up to tape us. And I remember thinking like, oh, yeah, man, we're getting there, man. These tapers are coming to tape us. So it was a very exciting time of like, you know, being 23 or something and starting to like play gigs and like get a following. And then we like played Philly every, we did like New York every Thursday. We did like Philly every Friday, Boston every Tuesday. We like did residencies and like, yeah, it was like the beginning of my whole touring life, I guess, with Joe. And we eventually put out some albums. Yeah. It was more like almost emo instrumental, like indie rock or something versus jammy. I mean, we can jam, we can improvise and play together.
The shows were largely improv.
Yeah, they were largely improv. And then they morphed into this, like, you know, we wrote a bunch of songs and made records and then had songs that were like 3 minutes long and like, you know, had little jams, like instrumental verse chorus kind of songs.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the beginning of it all, really. And then the duo kind of disintegrated around 2009 or something. And I started my own band, and then Joe joined further.
Yep.
And we kind of went our separate ways for a while and just regrouped with J-Rad about 4 or 5 years ago or something. But
it's amazing. I wanted to ask you about the Grab project, because that was a... I'm a Fish fan, and that was like, it was such a strange time for Fish, like, and you guys were like on, you know, you guys were fully in the duo at the time. What was that experience like playing with those guys? Cause they had recently broken up their band, and now you're playing with them. I think you guys recorded with Trey on a solo album.
Yeah.
Like, was that, did that feel like it was just like another cool project? Cause it seemed
surreal. I remember, cause I had listened to Fish a bunch in high school and seen them, and they were big in like New Jersey. And if you were a musician hippie in New Jersey, you like in like 1995.
Yeah.
96, like you heard about Fish because they were like kind of taken over. They were like really doing well and growing and getting sort of big around that time. So it was totally surreal to be playing with them, because I had known about them and was a fan for sure. Listening to their music. And yeah, I remember being in my apartment in Brooklyn, and like, I think we did the gig, we did those gigs in like 2006.
Yeah.
And I remember being in my apartment and like hanging out with all my friends, and my phone like didn't work, but it only worked on like speaker mode. So I was getting this call from an 802 area code, Burlington area code. And we were all hanging out, and I like hit, I was like, hello. And it's like, hey, hello, Marco, this is Trey. And my friends were like, what? Like, he's like, are you around in Brooklyn? Like, we're recording a record. I just want you to stop by and check it. I was like, yeah. So it was cool. It was like, all right. Like, things are growing. Things are really, and so we hung out with Trey, recorded with Trey, made like, I think we're on half the songs on that record.
On Bar 17. Yeah.
And then we, you know, played, amphitheaters like a couple summers after, or that summer.
Yeah.
I don't even, like, it happened sort of quickly. And yeah. And then, you know, and then that was over, and then we went back to touring with the duo, and the crowds were getting bigger too.
You know,
it was like, yeah, it's really cool to see it all.
It was a pretty cool project too. I mean, unique sounds and sort of different from what you guys were doing together.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. It was a weird time for the jam scene, particularly cause Fish was broken up, but you guys sort of like had this really cool year or so, that really good stuff.
Right. Yeah. It was fun.
So back to your tour, you guys are going out on the road October 10th, I think, starting in Buffalo, and you guys are going all over, and then you added some dates out west as well. Mm-hmm. So you're going kind of October to December,
yeah,
with some time, you know, in between, but like there's a lot of tours, including a stop in Japan as well as a bunch of US dates.
Yeah. Well, this band J-Rad's taking a bunch of months off, and it was just sort of the perfect time to put out the record and to hit the road to promote the record. And so, yeah, we'll be coming back to DC in the end of October.
October 26th. Yeah, yeah. I'll be there for sure. Nice. And you guys are doing a bunch of shows, obviously, with like throughout the Northeast, so people can check that out at your website, which we'll put in the show notes. But you're going back on the road with Karina and Andy, right?
Yeah, Karina and DB. Andy, our drummer, moved to Oregon and has a kid and is playing with this band called Pink Martini. Actually,
that's okay.
Cool. But so we have a DB. He lives in Brooklyn, and he's kind of filling in, taking the reins there, I guess.
Awesome. And I want to ask you about Karina, because like you played with her since 2016, I think, and you were just describing like playing with, you know, all kinds of different people. Like, do you feel like, I feel like after she started playing with you, she's like taken off, and now she's doing a bunch of her own stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like as a musician, you have like an obligation or opportunity to like help, you know, younger artists who are just coming up, like get noticed and kind of get out there? Like, is that part of the deal, or did you just start playing with her and you're like, she's awesome?
I mean, Karina doesn't need any help. She's got it going on. I mean, when I was Karina's age or whatever, when I was, you know, first starting touring and playing more, when I was like 23, 24, I was like playing with like, you know, Trey and Mike, and playing with guys like Skerrick and Charlie Hunter and Mike D and all sorts of cats from New Orleans, George Porter. It's just, there's no age with music. I mean, you're like maybe a new younger person on scene, but you're plopped right on stage with them, and music is ageless and timeless. And so you just do your thing, and people are attracted by your energy or your whatever, the way you play. And of course, and Karina is just like, you know, totally captivating on stage, and is such a killer musician. No wonder she's totally, you know, killing it right now, doing her own thing. But yeah, there's always like, you know, people coming up through, showing their faces up, like, Scott, the guitar player from J-Rad, his girlfriend, is a violinist, and she, her name is Katie Jacoby, and she's killer. And she has her own thing, and she was doing her own thing for a while. And Scott and her have like a band, and then she got like a call to like go on the road with The Who. So she's like playing with The Who. Like, it just, you know, if you love what you're doing, you're gonna, and you show your face and put out your vibe and play your ass off, you're gonna get gigs.
That's just how it goes.
You
know? Yeah,
that's just how it goes.
So you talked a little bit about the studio and your, you know, making music in upstate New York. When you have all these different projects and you're out on tour with J-Rad and doing all kinds of other projects, how does the solo work sort of like fit in? Do you see it as like a creative outlet that you need, or is it just like stuff that you write and you just kind of put aside for when you can deal with it, or something else? I'm just curious how that fits into the overall kind of mix.
Right. You know, original music and making my own records is like top priority. And you know, and the J-Rad, as fun as it is, it's also like, you know, we have fun playing the music of the Grateful Dead, but you know, everyone's making their own music and doing their own thing.
Yep.
And like, ultimately, you know, you want to be putting your own music out there. And people are going to, in my mind, people are going to want to know what you're doing creatively, and what your sort of quote unquote voice sounds like, and what your records sound like. And J-Rad is also a top priority too, but it's just, you know, it's not my voice, you know, or anyone's voice.
Yeah.
We're like talking to my friend about it, and he's like, oh yeah, you're preaching the gospel to the people. They want to hear, you know, we're like serving. And I love it. And I love what we're doing with the music. And then I was talking to my other friend about it. I'm like, we're like a therapy band. And like, you know, people have like therapy dogs. Like people like need to hear the Grateful Dead, and they need to hear this concert and have this sort of cathartic release. in the middle of the concert. And like, I was seeing people last night, they're like crying because we played this one song. We haven't played it in a while. And like, people are really having these emotional experiences at these shows.
Yeah.
And as are we, quite honestly. There's like some moments where, you know, heavy stuff's going on in your personal life and you play a certain song and you're like, oh man, you know, music is so powerful.
Especially music that you like grew up listening to or have known for so long, right?
The music of the dead. But I mean, ultimately making my own records and figuring out, you know, I want to write a song that people know as well as they know Casey Jones, for example. So I personally have that
sort
of feeling of obligation to do that.
Yeah.
Not like, it's not a burden. I just love doing it.
Yeah.
And being in Woodstock and having a separate studio and going out and working is like, it's just what I love to do. I mean, I go out for work and I play music and I go home to chill and I play music. So it's just what I love to do.
Yeah.
So look, I'm a fortunate,
fortunate one. Right. Totally.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of really good songs on this album. And I think a lot of like, you know, catchy songs without being, you know, they're all like authentically catchy. I think maybe every track on there. So
awesome.
Really
Thank
cool.
You.
Yeah. It's awesome. And I hope people who haven't heard it yet will check it out. You mentioned Richard Swift earlier, and I think he's the one who connected you to Leon Michaels.
Yeah.
And he passed away, and we've lost so many people recently, Jeff Austin, most recently, Neil Casal. Mm-hmm. You guys like, I think, or at least based on my interpretation and others, kind of dedicated a whole show to Neil at Red Rocks, or at least many of those songs were kind of played in his memory. And this, like, musicians, you know, it's like you just said, you're lucky to be playing music and doing what you love, but at the same time, it's like, it can be difficult. It can be a hard life, obviously, on the road, and maybe unpredictability of the industry and how technology's changed, all that stuff. It's complicated, but
it's true. Yeah. There's definitely ups and downs, and yeah, you got to get it when you can. I mean, that's just how it is for everyday life, I guess. But especially with music, when it's your job, you never know. There's times where you're like not making any money or doing anything. You're always playing music, but to survive.
Yeah.
To have it be your living, it takes a lot of work.
Yeah, and I think probably it takes a toll. I guess my it seemed like the Neil Casal thing, well, it definitely hit us music fans hard in the scene because everyone kind of knew him and he was such a friendly, nice guy. Mm-hmm. Like, what can we as music fans do to help artists like just know that, you know, they're supported and that they have, is it just like go to shows, be nice, buy records, keep spreading the good word?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely those things for sure. Yeah. Support, show up. I mean, you know, but even like on a deeper level, you know, musicians who are hanging out with other musicians, you know, need to like, maybe you gotta, you know, sort of stick your head in there and sort of ask them, see actually how they're doing. Cause it's easy to, on a superficial level, you know, you tour and you see your musician friends and they're like, oh, they seem to be doing great.
You know?
But like, maybe there's something going on that you know is going on, but you hope it's better, but it's not.
Yep.
I mean, and Russo, even like said this on the first day of this tour, he was like, it's like, man, I love you, man. I just want to tell you that, you know, I love you too, man. Like, it was like kind of funny. But then, like, it was also like, he's like, you know, I got to say that stuff more often because you never know, like, when something might happen. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. You never know when anything's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it was just cool to hear that. I was like, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good thing to remember. Just like,
hang
out with your friends and be like, yo, I appreciate you. And, you know, I hope you're doing good.
Yeah.
Or compliment them or say, you know.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of that going on, just the all of us, even between J-Rad and even between my own band. Mm-hmm. Like, we get in each other's faces and we kind of see how they're doing.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
good. As fans, you know, support the music and like, I guess there's not much you can do, but besides that. But.
It's like, yeah, it's hard. I mean, I know it's hard just from watching, like, you know, you go on the road and everyone's cheering and then you come off the stage and then you're by yourself or with another person.
It's
and
true.
Like,
right,
you're like, the next thing is when you're out in front of fans again.
Yeah. I where did I hear, like, there's nothing scary. There's nothing more scary than in, like, an idle mind.
Yeah. Know? Right.
And you're like, oh, right. Like, musicians, like, we're constantly surrounded by lots of people.
Yeah,
on stage and then off the stage and then you go home. You go to the hotel room by yourself and you're like, it's eerily quiet in here. And like,
what do I do now?
Yeah, like your mind starts wandering and then certain people can get depressed. Certain people can just go out and party more.
Yeah,
or you know, I mean, it just depends. Yeah, you just gotta like keep an eye on yourself.
Yeah. And keep an eye on your friends, like you said, which makes a lot of sense.
I went to Berklee College of Music, and one teacher just gave me a bit of advice that's always stuck with me, which is pretty basic. Well, it's like, look, everything in moderation. Like, have your fun, but just try to do it all moderately.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that would maybe help you with your mind not wandering and getting depressed or whatever. But,
yeah.
You know, just, you know, you can have a family, wife and kids, and you could still be on the road. You just got to do everything in moderation. You know, you got to go on the road and make sure you come home.
Yeah.
Make sure you have a good time with your kids and your wife and make sure you're taking care of yourself. Lots of ways that I center myself or whatever, like make sure that I feel chill is like just like playing piano when I go home and I have alone time. It's just nice to... I call it like mental floss.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of play piano and clean out the cobwebs in the brain.
Nice.
And all of a sudden it's like a little reset button.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right,
good. You know, I'm ready.
But, you know, whatever it takes to center yourself, you got to remember to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, that's really important. And there's a lot of organizations out there like Music Cares that did the Neil Casal tribute that are like exist to help musicians with, you know, stuff like that. And just like, healthcare, the things that don't come easily to a touring musician, you know? So it's good that organizations like that are around, but that taking care of yourself is important.
That's, Yeah. It's easy to not take care of yourself on the road.
Yeah.
But, you know,
that's cool.
Everything in moderation.
I'm glad you're staying balanced and you're going to be home for your kid's birthday.
Yeah. I'll be home for my kid's birthday. And, then I'll be on the road with my own band for a while. Which is good, you know. It's what that's what you got to be doing.
Yeah,
you gotta be putting your stuff out there.
Yeah, and so the album again is Let It Slide. We'll link to it in the show notes. And if you want to see Marco's band, which you should, you can basically catch them almost anywhere in the U.S. or at least reasonably speaking, you guys are covering a ton of ground between the East Coast, the Midwest, the South, the West Coast, and Japan.
Yeah, and Japan, we're just playing a festival out in Japan.
That's a hell of a trip for a festival, but I hope it's a good experience.
Yeah.
You did Fuji Rock back in the day, right?
I did, yeah.
So you've been there to play music.
I have,
It seems
times.
Like it must be like a crazy different experience.
Totally, yeah. When we first played there, we played in little clubs, and the shows were super early. Like, we started at like 6.
Okay.
And the shows were done at like 9.
Okay.
Or even earlier.
Uh-huh.
And we played, and you'd play your song, and normally the crowd sort of erupts towards the end of the song. But like in Japan, they really, really wait until it's like you're done with the song.
They do.
And then they like stand up and clap. And you're like, oh my God, stop being so polite.
Yeah,
like,
it's so
get,
polite.
Get a little rowdy.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I hope it's good, man. And good luck out on the road. And thanks for taking time to chat with us.
Right on.
All right, thanks for tuning in and hope you enjoyed that interview with Marco. Here's the track Humans from Let It Slide out now. See you all next week.